It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Late last year, a young woman went viral on TikTok for crying about her new job, her first out of college.
I get on the train at 7:30 and I don't get home till like 6:15 earliest. And then like, I don't have time to do anything. I want to shower, eat my dinner and go to sleep. I don't have time or energy to cook my dinner either. Like, I don't have energy to work out. Like, that's out the window. Like, I'm so upset. Oh my God. The 9-to-5 schedule in general is crazy.
Some commenters called the young woman spoiled. Others said she had a point. A recent Pew survey found that just 40% of Americans between 18 and 29 have positive views of capitalism. The next oldest age range were only a little more likely to feel good about it. Our next guest says the economic realities faced by recent generations may be a big part of the story. The share of the country's GDP that goes to workers' pay is historically low. Homes, historically unaffordable. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Has your experience in the working world left you disillusioned with working, with business, with American capitalism? How does it serve workers? How does it leave workers out? Are there changes you'd like to see? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Heather Long is a columnist and member of the Washington Post editorial board and their former U.S. economics correspondent. Heather, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, it's great to be here.
You linked in a recent piece to this Pew survey, and it's interesting. It's a pretty, it looks like a stairwell, American attitudes toward capitalism. The younger you are, the less you like it. What do you see when you look at those numbers?
I mean, it's pretty astonishing when you first look at it to see so many Americans, particularly in the millennial and Gen Z, who really aren't happy. Now, people immediately will email me. I had a lot of older readers who emailed me like, well, so what do these people want to do? Go live in Russia or Cuba? And, you know, realistically, I don't think that they're clamoring for that version of communism or socialism. But I do think people are very frustrated with the current system, and not just in the funny way. I know you played that one clip of the young woman saying, I don't have enough time, you know, do my hair care, do my exercise. But I look at this through an economic lens. I'm a data nerd, and that there is some validity to these people who are upset, young people. And basically the millennials have been dubbed the unluckiest generation. Now, this is a generation that had a great growing up in the 80s and 90s, and then boom, 9/11 hits. Just as they're coming out of college or coming out of high school, we have the great financial crisis. So many people, you know, 10% unemployment rate, a lot of people not being able to get a foothold into the working world at all, or if they were, it was sort of menial jobs and retail and whatnot. Then you just, when people think they finally got something going in the end of the 2010s, boom, the pandemic hits. Once again, millions of people are out of work. Everything's getting shaken up. Then, of course, we go into the inflation crises. And so, you know, there's some validity here that it's been very, very hard, statistically harder for millennials and Gen Z to get their financial life and their career life going than any other recent generation or really anyone alive today.
Right. And when we think about milestones that are related to our economic well-being, that might be getting that first real job or getting married, buying a house, all these things. It seems like with that list of events you just mentioned, a lot of people, it's like that, you know, the mirage in the desert. Those things you think you're about to hit keep fading further and further off into the distance.
That's right. Obviously, millennials have been known for delaying getting married and delaying having children. And this, obviously, this is the most unaffordable time right now to buy a home since the early 1980s or late 1970s. When you compare the prices versus then, you know, you compare inflation and you also compare the mortgage rates. Obviously, mortgage rates were higher in the early 80s, but home prices were much lower. So when you actually kind of do an apples to apples comparison, it's pretty tough right now to get life started. And then on top of that, of course, college costs are higher. So if anybody's tried to get higher education, they usually saddle with some debt. And it's harder and harder to save for retirement. So you put all that together and it's pretty bleak. It was interesting. I got two, you know, there were 5,000 comments on this piece. It clearly struck a nerve, a lot of social media discussion. And I, as you might imagine, my inbox got flooded. I even got a few text messages from some friends. And there were kind of two broad reactions to it. I'll be interested in what people think on your show. And there were the people, many of whom were, let's say, over 50, who kind of said, these young people just need to get it together. You know, that this is just whining. And they just really refused to look at the data and the reality that there have been some very challenging circumstances for people under 40 in this country in the past 15 years. The other reaction was actually even more different than I was expecting. And that was people saying, yes, good article, but you left things out. Of course, people were frustrated about what they see as particularly corporations' role in climate change or the inability of the U.S. government and others to address climate worries and woes. Of course, a lot of worries about politics and what's going on with wars around the country, and also with people just feeling companies are getting bigger and more powerful, that it's kind of a David and Goliath situation, that they really, you know, it almost feels that they can't do anything to push back, whether it's companies owning all your data and tracking everywhere you're going, or whether it's a feeling that you walk into the grocery store, not only are the prices higher, but you've got the shrinkflation, what you're getting for your dollar is literally, you know, fewer cookies or fewer crackers. And so I thought that was interesting that there were kind of those two broad bucket reactions.
Talking to Heather Long from the Washington Post, looking at the younger generations, we're talking up to 40, really, Gen Z and millennials, worse attitudes toward capitalism, less approval in polls. This is showing up in the business world. Want to hear what you think, your experience at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring in a caller. Mike is with us on the road in his semi. Mike, hi.
Yeah, it's not necessarily just a young person's problem. I'm kind of frustrated with these companies that are just hiring part-time. They hire a dozen people to do the work of four people, and then they don't have to pay any benefits or even a decent wage. Before I'm semi-retired now, but I had a business of my own, and I had an 820 credit score when I was out on my own trying to put something together out there. Now, it's just not working.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. And Mike, Heather, Mike brings us to another big point in your piece about why people might be losing faith in the business world and capitalism, how businesses treat those people. Take us there.
Exactly. No, Mike hit on the perfect point. He's right, 100% right. There has been a lot of frustration and a lot of growth in gig work or contract work or independent contractor work. And part of the reason that I wrote this piece wasn't just to say that there was frustration, but to really call on business leaders. I had actually been at a dinner in early March, and all these CEOs were like, I just don't understand why people don't love capitalism, or, you know, why all these young people are so frustrated. And I kind of looked at them like, but don't you understand the relationship between workers and companies has changed dramatically in the past 50 years, particularly at big companies. And for the first time in history, or at least in recent history, more Americans do work at bigger companies than smaller mid-sized firms, which is a big change from how it used to be even in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And one of those big changes is just what Mike was driving at. It used to be, obviously, you worked at a company for many years, sometimes your whole career. You would get a pension. Many workers would get a pension at the end of that. There was a sense that the company was really kind of taking care of people a little bit more than you. And whereas now a lot of the risk is transferred to the worker, you know, and obviously if you're a gig worker or a contract worker, you don't even get any retirement money from the company. You know, you're just paid your hourly wage or your contract fee, and then you have to set up your own healthcare, your own retirement, any other benefits that you have. And even for people who are hired as a W-2 worker, who are considered a full-time on-staff worker, of course, pension plans are very few and far between these days, including in my own organization, has been phased out. And even with something like a healthcare plan, you know, there's usually different options. You have to try to figure out, you know, is my weird condition or medicine going to be covered on this new plan? So it's just become a lot harder and more confusing, even for people who supposedly have those golden benefits still.
Thanks for that call, Mike. We'll go to Tomas now in Madison. Tomas, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I'm calling just kind of to echo the sentiment that, you know, as another millennial, I have a very deep distrust of the capitalist system, and in particular, the complicity of the political system, specifically the two-party system in the United States, and distrust a lot of the rhetoric around progressive concessions to socialist ideals, because it seems too convenient in the moment, and ultimately, don't trust the continuity of current political systems to actually make real change to that. That's incredibly necessary in multiple different factors, facets of society, maybe most importantly, environmental justice and climate change.
Tomas, thanks a lot for the call. Heather, Tomas, worried about capitalism and beyond, the system itself, it seems like.
Exactly. And that was certainly reflected in a lot of poll data, including that Pew Research data that you cited and I had cited in my piece, where there's just frustration and growing distrust of institutions generally, whether it's political institutions like Congress or the judiciary, or whether it's you know, different types of business organizations or civic organizations, and that's pervasive. And I think some of that is real in the sense that we haven't as a nation been able to deal with some of the big challenges that have been sitting in front of us for decades now, whether it's how to fix and reform Social Security so we can preserve it for future generations, such as millennials. That's one of the focuses of my piece. If you want an easy solution, why can't, and you're a business leader, why aren't you advocating for Congress to find a very simple fix to ensure that at least a secure retirement will be there for many, many people for decades to come. But he's right. Or climate change is another one that it continues to linger out there. I remember back in 2008 when I first got to Washington, D.C., both Republicans and Democrats were talking about, what if we did something like a carbon tax? Obviously, nobody likes taxes, but you know, there were actual debates and it felt like we were going to tackle some of these big problems. And sitting here 15 years later, we really don't have much of a plan.
Heather Long is with us, columnist and member of the Washington Post editorial board. She's talking with us about her recent article, Here's Why Americans Under 40 Are So Disillusioned with Capitalism. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you an American worker under 40 or thereabouts? What are your thoughts on how the world of work works for you? Do you think it's fair? Do you think things need to change? Do you worry about things like retirement looking ahead? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up the conversation about younger Americans' views on capitalism, younger, 40 and under in surveys. The minority of people in those age groups support capitalism right now or have a favorable view of it, according to Pew surveys. Heather Long is with us, columnist, member of the Washington Post editorial board, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you? Are you feeling disillusioned with the way the business world, the capitalist world works? Join in at 800-642-1234. We heard from Gary, who couldn't stay on the line. Gary says, it used to feel like everyone was working together in the company. Now it seems like it's all about the higher-ups making money and layoffs. And Heather, that ties right into a statistic you mentioned, a measure of how much of corporate profits goes to workers and how much corporate profits are going up. What do we see? Is Gary on the right track there?
Yeah, that's interesting. It's always a good gauge. I know we read the headlines, and I'm part of that news media that reports, oh, there's been all these big wage gains in the last few years. But sometimes it's helpful to step back and say, okay, how much of our national GDP, so our the economic pie, if you will, is going to workers, to their salaries and pay versus to capital? And that's a long-running statistic, and we've had it since the World War II era and all the way through. And it actually went up a little bit in the late 90s when we had a roaring economy then and a lot of wage increases. And a lot of people have been expecting it to tilt a little bit more towards workers, particularly after all these headlines we've been seeing about pay gains and union bargaining. And the reality is, Gary's got a point that it really hasn't budged. Basically, what's happened is, yes, workers have had some nice pay gains in the last 2 years, but at the same time, corporate profits have also skyrocketed. So the percent of the pie going towards workers has not increased in the way that we've seen in prior eras of prosperity. And so that's just a good gauge, to remind people that, wait a minute, things may not be quite as equal or certainly a similar dynamic to what a lot of our parents and grandparents experienced in 50s, 60s, 70s era.
Let's go back to our callers. Joanne is with us in Wisconsin Rapids. Joanne, hi.
Hi, great discussion. The thing about, healthcare, I've lived in Europe. I had to get an operation. The same operation cost here in the States at the time it was $10,000. I got the operation, same operation in Europe, Germany, for $4,000. And I was able to leave earlier than expected from the hospital. So the problem is capitalism, basically. Unfortunately, our politicians are telling us that Social Security is not going to be there for us, so we're not expecting it. So if you brainwash us like that, we're basically going to accept what it is and not fight against it.
Joanne, thanks for the call. I think Germans would consider themselves to have capitalism, Heather, but a different sort of attitude towards social safety nets. So did you hear, including in the comments on your article, did you hear sort of compare and contrast with, say, Western European economies?
Yeah, Rob, I think you're 100% right. That's what I told CEOs when they would say to me, well, do all these young people just want socialism or communism, is I think what most people are envisioning, and you can see in a lot of the comments on the article, is something more like a European style system where there is a bigger safety net, where there are better healthcare outcomes in many countries for a lower cost, as Joanne was just pointing out. And certainly where there are better pension and retiree benefits than broadly what we're seeing in the United States for the population as a whole. So, yeah, I think you're right that that's what most people think would be a better outcome. How do you get there? My proposal in my column is really to start with shoring up Social Security so that we can tell people like Joanne, it will be there for you.
Joanne, thanks for the call. Jay joins us now in Milwaukee. Jay, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. For me, there are two different types of capitalism. One, until the mid-80s, that was true capitalism. Then the whole Reagan administration, the whole Clinton administration, it went all berserk. Everybody has to end up making money hand on fist, and it was just crazy. We have billionaires. We are going to have trillionaires very soon, and the minimum wage is still there.
Jay, thanks a lot for the call. Heather, I've seen other people make that observation that something big changed in the 80s and as Jay said, through into the 90s, where you start to see wage gaps growing, that share of worker part of the GDP going down. Is Jay onto something? Were there significant policy changes then?
Yes, you can definitely point to a number of significant policy changes. You see a big decline in unionization starting in the 80s and early 90s. Obviously, in the 90s, you start to see global trade opening up. The economy becomes more relentlessly focused on low costs and efficiencies. You also have a big change in tax policy starting in the Reagan era, where the top rate on the highest earners, the wealthiest in the country, comes down quite dramatically during that period. And the last aspect, which I think probably gets the too little attention, is you have a massive explosion starting in the early 80s of the financial sector. So the financial sector has just become more and more of a dominant part of the U.S. economy than it used to be. Banking used to be kind of a boring profession, and then you start to get those, I don't know if you'd call it Wild West, but you certainly start to get a lot more financial securitization and innovation and all these sorts of things, and bigger and bigger banks and bigger risk-taking.
And Heather, just in our last minute or so, you mentioned meeting with some business leaders who are talking about these issues. Is the attitude you're getting like, kids today, but whatever, we'll keep doing what we're doing? Or, this is something significant that we should really pay attention to?
I think it's starting to become something significant that people are paying attention to, which is the good sign. The bad sign is, as I point out in my piece, their conclusions about what to do about it. I wrote this piece partly in response to the BlackRock CEO, you know, one of the most powerful people on Wall Street, and he writes an annual letter, and his solution to a lot of the problems we've been discussing in the past half hour was, don't worry, we will just create a new BlackRock product to solve your retirement needs. And while I think he was trying to be good-hearted, it just comes off as, wow, that sounds like you're just going to make even more money from an already broken system.
Heather, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for the conversation.
That's Heather Long, columnist and member of the Washington Post editorial board. She talked with us about her recent article, the headline, Here's Why Americans Under 40 Are So Disillusioned with Capitalism. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network.